Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 402.
Carnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac. To the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac. Go crazy. Touchdown, Auburn. 80 yards.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, this has been sort of a surreal last few days, and we've got several things of varying degrees of severity and importance to talk about. We haven't had a show for about a month, I guess, or three weeks to a month, because frankly there hasn't been that much to talk about. We've saved up some tidbits here and there to cover tonight, and plus we've been doing our Game of Thrones coverage for the White Rocket show on our sister network. But our sister channel on this network. But that's over with now. And then for those of you that are interested in that, go over to the White Rocket podcast and you can listen to those. But we were planning on coming back tonight, Monday night, Memorial Day night, to do a show, to get back on track anyway. And then yesterday morning, Sunday morning, we got the terrible news of what had happened Saturday night in Auburn with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Rod Bramblett. I was in Indianapolis in a hotel room for my family's, our first ever trip to Indianapolis 500, and man, talk about a sobering bit of news that kind of slaps you in the face and puts, you know, gives you some perspective on the world and on what's really important on life. What do you know, and what did you hear, and when did you hear it, and how did you first react to it?
I mean, I think I heard like a lot of people. There was rumors on Twitter, and then it was confirmed, in the morning there was a lot more concrete kind of news. But it was just a terrible situation. They have two children that are, still young people, and it's those people are without their parents now, and it's a terrible thing. And yeah. Outside of the, there's kind of the human element, and then there's kind of the his role at Auburn element. And I think the, first and foremost as human beings and parents, I mean, that's really scary.
Sure.
To just kind of out of the blue like that, in a regular, family car trip somewhere. So, But the other, we're here, this is an Auburn podcast, so the other part of it is kind of the Auburn side of it. And he was an important part of Auburn, an important part of, being an Auburn fan was experiencing things through his eyes and his voice. And that's kind of the other part I thought about today, and especially when I kind of read the different tribute things and listened to his calls at different events, like he was a guy who was put in a tough situation because he followed a legend and people weren't sure he was up to that, but he was, and he owned it and made it his own. And he had, some of the greatest calls in college football history, honestly. But not just that, but like that he has been the voice of Auburn, like in all these other sports too. And especially like to me, the last few months when the basketball team went on that run, a lot of those games, there was different games at different times when I couldn't be home, but I was listening to the radio call. Mm-hmm. And he was really great at bringing you in and making you feel like you were there. So,
yeah. And you put it very well that there's such a huge human side to it that we certainly don't want to neglect, but Yeah, we're an Auburn show. We're about the Auburn family, Auburn football, and everything that's peripheral to it. And he was absolutely a tremendous part of that. And you're right that, I mean, I remember like it was yesterday hearing the news that Jim Fife had basically dropped dead. It just was horrible. I was devastated for days. And I had just run into him in the airport in Atlanta just a few days before that and had just exchanged a couple of words in passing with him. And then, you know, go to work a couple of days later or whatever and hear, oh, he had a, you know, something caused him to, I think an aneurysm or whatever, a blood clot that caused him to drop dead. And it's just horrifying to me that our beloved announcers now, the last two, have just unexpectedly and way before their time, you know, passed away. It's horrible. And and you're exactly right too that when Jim passed away, there was a lot of talk about who would take over for him, and one of the favorites was Barry McKnight, who's at Troy and was very close with Jim and with Rod. And then people weren't really talking about Rod. He was just like the junior guy doing the baseball team for a few years. And he wasn't really talked about at first. And then Auburn just kind of came out and said, he's going to be the guy. And we all kind of went, oh, well, okay, well, good luck to him because he's following Jim Fife. You know, there's no way he'll ever, you know. And, yeah, he absolutely stepped up. And he was different than Jim. And what was interesting to me was that especially the first few years, I think he deliberately tried to be different from Jim. You know, he would say different things. But I feel like, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like because that was prior to the 03 season. I think the first, I think the first football game that Rod got to do was the Southern Cal game at the beginning of 03.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he tried for the first couple of years to be his own thing, which is 100% makes sense. Absolutely, he would do that. But I also feel like after a couple of years, he kind of said, you know, Jim basically set the mold for what this should sound like, and I'm going to conform more to it, not as trying to ape Jim Fife, but as trying to fit in with what Auburn fans like. Does that make sense? And what we expect?
Well, and I think maybe you're right that he tried to be his own voice at the beginning and purposely stayed away from some Jim Fife stuff. Well, and like, I think he, over the years, he kind of let those controls go. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't say touchdown Auburn, really, at first. He would say other things. And then eventually he just started saying touchdown Auburn, which was Jim Fife's trademark. But he basically – I always felt like it was Jim Fife that basically coined that little very simple phrase – And you know, people that are listening that don't know Jim Fife maybe don't understand why saying touchdown Auburn is important, but it was the way Jim said it and that he basically was the first one to make a big deal out of it with his touchdown, you know, that. And so I could understand Rod not wanting to do that at first, but I feel like that became an Auburn thing as much as a Jim Fife thing. And So eventually Rod just said, it's an Auburn thing, and I'm going to do it just like Jim did. And he started doing it, and he was great at it. And you're absolutely right, too, that over the years, man, he got the opportunity to cover some huge things, and he always delivered, again, different from Jim, but in his own way, absolutely masterful. And you know, there'll never be another Jim Fife, but there'll never be another Rod Bramblett. He did it his way, and he made it his, and he made it great. And I think he surprised a lot of people just how much he made it his thing and did it so well.
Two things I think about is, one is I could always sense, like, how he was feeling about the officiating in whatever sport he was calling. Because he, you know, wasn't trying to be a down the middle neutral person. He was calling it as an Auburn fan, and he would tell you, because you couldn't see it if it was the radio call, he would tell you, like, how he felt the officials were doing in terms of Auburn in that game. But also the other part of him that needs to be said is that when you're an announcer, sometimes very, very, very rarely you are given the opportunity to call gigantic historic sports moments. Mm-hmm. And you have to be ready for that moment, and you have to, you know, do the moment justice and not over talk and convey it in a way that works. And I think, you know, and I've read some stuff, listened to some interviews with people that have called different historic events, you know, whether it's the Masters or Olympic things or Super Bowl things or whatever else. And Jim Fife fell in that category with some of the things that he called. The kick six, you know, of course, is number one on that list, but some of the other things,
you mean
too.
Rod. And you mean Rod. You said Jim.
I'm sorry.
Well, again, they've become almost together in our minds now,
yes.
You know, because
yes,
they both
you're right. Great. But Rod called the, you know, the kick six, and it, he was at that moment, and he was ready, and he made a call that will people listen to forever. And you can listen to his call without seeing the play and just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the highest compliment you can give somebody.
Oh, absolutely. I think that different announcers at different programs in college sports approach that job differently. And some feel like they have to be kind of the almost emotionless, you know, just telling you what's happening. But I think that long ago we established that Auburn fans want our announcer to be as passionate about it as we are. And those two both were absolutely as passionate about it as we were. And it showed. They you know, Rod was able to do the job in a thoroughly professional way that was as good as anybody could have done in terms of describing what was happening. But at the same time, there was a celebratory nature to it as well, an excitement. You know, we want our radio guy to get us excited because we want him to be as excited as we are. And he always did.
Yes.
Man.
He did. And I think he did he did a great job, like in the moments before a game, especially a big game, of bringing you into that moment, and bringing you into that field, the stadium, the court, wherever you were, and what the stakes were, and what the mood was, and I think that was a skill.
Yeah, I think that there have been so many great ones, but the one that still just gets me emotional after all this time now, 9 years is, or going on 9 years, I guess, was at the end of the national championship game where he was saying one thing and then he stopped and he said, 53 years, 53 years of waiting, of hoping, of dreaming, of coming so close. It's over. You know, and because that was what you and I had been talking about for so long leading up to that, to the end of that season, was that it had been so long and we had come so close and always something happened, right? That was always our thing, is that always something happened. And he encapsulated in a couple of sentences there, you know, of hoping, of dreaming, of praying, you know, whatever, of coming so close.
Byram waits for the snap into place. There it is. The kick is up. The kick is good. Auburn wins 22-19. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And now, here in the desert, Auburn's journey is complete. 53 years of waiting, of hoping, of dreaming, of coming so close. It's all over. The Auburn Tigers are on top of the college football world, and the view from up here is sheer perfection. Auburn 22, Oregon 19. The Tigers are BCS national champions.
And that's what I wanted to hear in that moment. I didn't want to just hear, hey, we won. I wanted to hear, we've come so close so many times, this means even more. And he absolutely nailed that in just a few words, you know?
Yes.
That's the mark, I think, of a real pro at a job like that, is They're accurate, they're informative, they're clear, but they're also emotional, they're celebratory when it's required, and they know their history, they know what they're talking about, and they can make you it resonate on many levels at once without a whole lot of words, and that's very rare. So where do we, I mean, again, it's all about Rod for now, but where do we go? I mean, how long?
I don't know.
I mean, will they? How long do you think they'll even before even start to think about who could follow him? Well, we thought that about Jim, and we had him right there under our nose at the baseball field and didn't know it. So, I trust that there's somebody out there that they will find. Maybe the next, you know, maybe right there at the station or right there in the Auburn network or whatever. Maybe not. But I trust there's somebody out there that loves Auburn and has that passion and ability. You know that when Jim Fife came in, he was more of a Kentucky basketball fan. I always thought that was interesting. He grew up listening to Kentucky basketball, and that was where he got a lot of his vocal mannerisms, was from listening to the great Kentucky broadcasters back in their heyday when he was a kid, you know, on the radio. And he became an Auburn fan kind of like overnight, and man, did he ever, you know. And I think Rod was always. And so it's just going to be interesting to see, because I'm sure they'll find somebody great. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, though.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, Rod, and like you said, there's the human side to it, his family, his kids. And I don't need, and then the incident itself, last thing I have about it, I mean, I know that they were rear-ended, and I don't want to go too deep into it, but just in terms of curiosity about, you know, if somebody else could be hurt the same way. I mean, apparently some teenager rear-ended them, and they were both in SUVs, and I was thinking, how fast does somebody have to be going to kill people by rear-ending them when they're in an SUV? That's like being in a tank. I just can't imagine. I have a hard time imagining how the incident must have played out to have done that much damage to the people involved. Have we heard anything else about that?
No, and I've purposely kind of not tried to read about that. This other person's still alive, and they're going to have to live with this for the rest of their life.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I'm just
the consequences of it.
And I'm not concerned about that person.
No, I know. I know.
But I just, it's the exact same thing that, and you have to be careful talking about stuff like this, obviously, and people's emotions are very raw, and it's a very sensitive thing. We get that. But it's just like when Lutze was killed, you know, you and I were on the air talking about it and saying, you know, when there's that much alcohol involved late at night and driving at high speeds, you know, things like this happen. It's not like a lightning bolt out of the blue. You know, you're engaging in a very high risk activity, and this, on the other hand, you know, they were just sitting there waiting to turn, apparently. So I just can't imagine. Was this kid going 150 miles an hour? I mean, I just can't even fathom it. So
I don't know.
Well, in any case, be careful out there, folks, because, you know, there are dangerous people all around us all the time.
Yes.
Well, I guess we should turn our attention to football-related stuff now, since that's what our show is here for. There have been a few developments this offseason that we haven't really had enough to do a whole show about up until now, but we got several. We totally saw Malik Willis's transfer portal activity coming, right?
Yes. As soon as they announced, you know, the two quarterback finalists for the starter spot, I think a lot of people thought, you know, even before that, that if Willis wasn't going to be in the top, a starter or a contender for starter, that he might not hang around, especially in a case like this where he's been passed by two younger players.
Right.
Now, he hasn't left, but the transfer portal thing is like he's allowed to talk to other teams and they're allowed to talk to him, but part of it is also like, where is there a vacancy? Who has a scholarship? And where is there the potential for him to play? And I think there's not that many places like that out there.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, when he was first being recruited at a high school, wasn't Virginia Tech the only other major university that was even really looking at him?
Mm-hmm.
So it's I mean, we got him thinking we could, you know, do some things with him, and Lord knows if we hadn't gotten Bo Nix and if we hadn't gotten Joey Gatewood or he was a bust and playing tight end for us, as people predicted, we would be awfully glad we had Malik Willis, you know? So I'm glad he came to Auburn, but he really, while he did show occasional flashes of Nick Marshall-ness, I just never got the sense that he was turning into a full-blown Nick Marshall. Did you?
No, and he's one of those weird players who seemed to get worse. Like, he seemed to be much more decisive and dangerous his first year than was last year.
And, you know, people are going to say it's because, for whatever reason, Gus's staff can't coach quarterbacks up, to which I always point out, look at Cam Newton when he first got on campus and look at him in the Oregon game or before. And, you know, look at Nick Marshall coming in as a defensive back and leaving as one of our best quarterbacks ever and passing for, you know, 44 points against Alabama and Bryant-Denny. I mean, we obviously, that's silly to say that, but it does make you wonder what's going on with him. But yeah, I think that whichever, hopefully we'll keep both of these quarterbacks. You know what I mean? In other words, I was more afraid that if Nick's got the job, Gatewood would leave and Willis would be the backup, or that Gatewood would get the job, Nick's would leave and Willis would be the backup. If we lose two of the three, now we're back down like we were a couple of years ago where you're looking at Sean White, you know.
Yes.
So I hope we can keep both and keep them both happy.
That's a very important thought.
Now, here we are desperately needing offensive linemen, and we've got 8,000 receivers. So we bring in a grad transfer receiver, John, Zach Farrar. What's up with that?
He's not going to change positions and play tackle.
No.
He's a big wide receiver. He originally went to Oklahoma, and then he went to a smaller school, and now he's at Auburn. He's a guy who, you know, I think they were specifically looking at to help fill some of the Slayton role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea is, again, he's a like the guy we got last year for on the offensive line. He's a grad transfer who has 2 years of eligibility left. So he's immediately eligible to play this year, but he has 2 years of eligibility. And I think while we do have a lot of receivers, we don't have a lot of big receivers that I think they have a lot of, you know, they have Seth Williams. We have McClain, these other guys, but I don't know how much confidence they have in them.
Yeah.
And I think, and Williams has really been playing at kind of some of the other spots, not at Slayton's spot. And Slayton's spot in the lineup is really, there's more kind of press coverage, and you have to be able to get away from coverage and people being right on top of you and stuff. And he was able to do that and then kind of run by them. And I think that's what they want out of that position. And I think they think this Farrar guy can help do that, can help make that happen.
I know that Gustav was certainly very excited to get him. And so that tells me that they definitely felt there was a need. I mean, we have had some attrition of that. Receiver is one of those positions that can be deceptive in terms of numbers because, you know, you can have like five, you know, decent receivers on campus and think, oh, we're well stocked. And you realize, well, you need like eight, you know, or something. And then like three will graduate or two will transfer away or one will flunk out or something. Like we've had a lot of attrition and a lot of turnover at that position the last few years.
Well, and we've had guys get hurt. I mean, you think you're fine and then, you know, you turn around and Stove is hurt and the other guy's hurt. And mm-hmm. So
two transferred and whatever. Yeah,
that's right. So you need guys, multiple guys who can play. And I think they feel like this guy can play. So.
Yeah. We got an H-back.
Yeah, this thing has been rumored for since the season ended. J.J. Wilson was a player at Arizona State who's a kind of a big fullback, but more of like the pass receiving kind of fullback and less of the bruiser blocker kind of fullback. So I think, you know, he could be a valuable piece in the offense. I think he could really fit in that kind of H-back role and do some of the blocking back stuff, but also come and kind of be a release valve, like a third down pass catcher. And I think, you know, it's another piece, I think, in the offense that can help. You know, H-back, tight end was, you know, we have a couple of guys there, but you know, losing Chandler Cox, and he was really valuable the last 2 years. You outside of the pirouetting thing. So he, you know, this guy I think can fill in at that spot and give us a little extra oomph in an area where we need it.
Joyner basically plays that spot, right? Although he's like a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, he was a freshman last year, and then it really – I think he could be this guy in 2 years.
Right.
But he's not there today.
No, no. Right now he's more of an athletic receiver type than he is a blocking solid mass, right, like a Cox.
Yeah.
Did you see the little video on Twitter of Joyner?
Mm-mm.
It was just like a five-second thing where Joyner goes running down the practice field and starts doing like hand flips, head over heels, hands, feet, mm-hmm. hands, feet. And then he spun like three times in the air and landed on his feet. And I'm like, well, that's awesome. I'm not sure how much use there is for it at H-back. It might be great if he's going out to catch a pass, you know, but it was very impressive. But yeah, so you need somebody a little more Chandler Cox like to be the solid blocking guy back there, and then you can run the receiver guy in when needed, I guess. So, well, that's good to have one with a little more experience coming in. So we're slowly plugging in some holes in the offense, except for the what is the deal with our offensive line? Is it all go back? Did Herb Hand just come in and like single-handedly ruin our offensive line for two seasons and then leave, and we're having to rebuild it? Is that it?
No, I mean, I think last year we were very inexperienced. We lost a lot of experience, and we were moving guys around and didn't have a lot of veteran guys. And this year we'll go into the year with a lot of guys who have played a lot of games and have played a lot together. We did lose, you know, Troxell had tore his ACL, and he's going to miss the season, and that hurts because he was a guy who had some potential at tackle and at guard, and people liked him, but he's been injured before, and injuries have been kind of a recurring thing from him. And I think, you know, especially at tackle, it's more of a concern. But I don't think it's the end of the planet. You know, that he's hurt. I mean, I don't think he was going to break through and start. But I do think, you know, we need some other guys to be able to step up out there and be the backup tackles if something happens.
And I'm not so much worried about this year because I think you're right. They're all ready to roll this year. But, I mean, next year they're all going to be gone. I mean, are we going to even have an offensive line next year? We may have to play like three-man offensive line football or, you know, what, 7-on-7 football, I'm afraid.
No, that's fair. I mean, there's a definite drop-off. I think we have some real, you know, some guys at center and guard where we feel pretty good about, but it's the tackle spots where there were we're going to have to do some high-profile recruiting, some JUCO guys, that kind of stuff. You know, or we need, like, the next five-star stud kind of guy who wants to come in and step in and play right away at tackle. We need one of those guys who can really badly. So,
yeah, absolutely. I don't know what good it does you to have a great receiver and a great running back and a great couple of quarterbacks if the offensive line is a patchwork mess like I'm afraid it's going to be in 2020, but we'll see.
That's truth.
We got a this means virtually nothing other than it wasn't some other team that got him, and we're not ruled out immediately. But we got the commitment of a 4-star running, at least, right? This would be like the second best running back in the country or something for 2021?
Yes, and it is. I mean, again, and I've said before on here, I'm going to say it again, like I'm not losing sleep about recruiting classes that are years away. But I think it does matter in this sense that one of the big reasons I think Carnell Williams was brought in was to help with recruiting at running back, where we had been getting good players, but we had not been getting kind of the blue chip stud kind of guys since Kerryon.
Right.
And I think even he was more of a rarity. And I think we needed to be getting back to getting some of the best players in the country at that position, some real difference makers. And I think this guy has the ability to do that. I mean, the one sentence scouting report is Mike Dyer, but faster.
I hadn't heard that. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I guess coming in, you know, in the next couple of years, he won't need to exhibit those particular skills that a Kerryon Johnson did, like the pop pass, the change of acceleration, and the ability and the ability to concisely break down episodes of Game of Thrones. I just can't. Many of our audience here hasn't heard that because we've been talking about it on the White Rocket show the last few weeks. But if you don't know, as Game of Thrones has been winding down, Kerryon Johnson's apparently a big fan of it, and he tweets like his deep philosophical thoughts on it every week, and it's just been a true joy to read his. You know, he's one of the funniest guys that's ever come through Auburn. He is absolutely hilarious. He's a very smart kid, and just very eloquent with his words. And he was just saying some stuff that was cracking me up. So I will miss his. I got to find out what other shows he likes so I can follow those shows to hear his commentary on them. It was very entertaining. But anyway, yeah, that was all just set up for a joke there. But yeah, having I think the visuals, right? As they say, the opticals of having four-star running backs in the future committing is good as opposed to not having them. And we talk about Florida in a little while. We'll kind of.
That's right.
Know. All right. And then last thing for the news, the football complex. It sounds like they've started twisting some arms and getting some cash money loosened up. I don't think they're halfway there yet, but I think that they're getting close to halfway there. Is that kind of what you've heard?
I think they are basically halfway there, and I think they're going to try to get some time on the board trustees agenda the next meeting or the one after that to talk, to kind of move forward with the project. I think they're at that point, so I think it's good news. And again, like we've talked about this, it's not a Gus thing. It's a, this is what we need to do, you know, for the long run to compete with these other schools in the arms race in college football. And and I think it's, you know, from that perspective, it's a good thing to move forward with it.
Yeah, that was always the worst part of it, was that there was at least a rumor, you know how much you can believe it, but there was this rumor that some of the big money donors were basically holding that money for the football facility hostage to getting their way about our coaching situation. And I get the feeling that Alan Green went to him and said, you're not holding anything hostage except us having the same or better facilities that other programs have. It's like, you know, you can make your point and we get it, but at the end of the day, in a few years, we still won't have this football facility no matter who the coach is. And if you look back at recent Auburn history, we tend to build things under one regime that the next couple of regimes get to enjoy. So, you know, I don't see Tony Barbee out there enjoying that $90 million Auburn Arena these days. You know what I mean? Just for one example. You need to build it now, regardless of whether you like or don't like Gus or whether he's going to be our coach in a couple of years or not. You got to do it. You got to get it done. And it's just silly to use it as some kind of a negotiating ploy. So that's my thoughts. Did we decide last time, do we want something like Clemson has with all the hootenanny? Or do we want just a nice professional building? Or, I mean, how important is it to having the recruiting angle on that you got like water slides and all that stuff?
I don't think it's that important to have the fun stuff. Like, I mean, again, Clemson has a lazy river, I think, and a slide.
Weird.
And I think, I mean, it is important that it look nice and that it has plenty of space for, you know, players and recruits to visit and meet and to conduct the business of the football team and to look, you know, impressive, basically. And to be a place that if you're an 18-year-old and you have choices, you can go anywhere, that you're like, man, this is a kind of a first-class operation and I want to go here.
Mm-hmm. It certainly seems – whatever Dabo is doing up there certainly seems to be working.
Sure, but it's a him kind of thing. Do you know what I'm saying? I think and you can't.
Yeah, you got to do your thing.
If you're not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to do what works for you and whatever fits your school's personality and all that. I agree. So, well, we'll see what they come up. I'm sure they'll come up with something good. Let's see. Go kart track? That'd be fun. Let's see. So, I've got. We've been having technical problems that are persisting. I haven't had a chance to go in and really redo our sound system. So I guess you won't be able to hear it, but I can still, I guess you won't be able to hear it, but I can still push this button for the audience if I can find, oh dear. It's been a while. I guess, is it this one?
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right, so that was our little listener questions thing for those that heard it or didn't hear it. Did you hear it, John?
No.
Ah, see, we still got issues to iron out. It's no fun when you don't hear the crappy sound.
Yeah, I know.
Things.
You just like to torment me with the sound.
So. Yeah, what good is it if I don't torment you? So, all right. You would know this is a listener question. Am I a listener now asking questions, or is this that somebody else had asked, or the Arkansas thing?
No, I thought it was a good question, so I put it in there.
All right. Well, you were a little bit merciful to Arkansas. The original question was, it was a statement, is that somebody said, I feel like it was on the on Stuart Mandel's show that they read it as a statement that somebody said, that they said a reporter in the SEC said that Arkansas last year was the worst team in the SEC, the whole SEC, since division play started in 1992. And Stuart was saying, like, you'd think that a couple of those Vanderbilt teams somewhere in there, you know, if nothing else, the worst team in the SEC since 1992 was last year's Arkansas. I mean, I know they were terrible, but could that be true?
I don't believe that. They were bad.
They lost to North Texas, didn't they?
They did, and they were bad, but. I think I went back and looked at, to try to be analytical about it, I went back and looked at Bill Connolly's numbers for some of the past seasons.
Okay.
For all the SEC rankings. And there were several years when they were teams that had lower statistical rankings than that Arkansas team. There was a Vanderbilt team, and actually one of the worst Tennessee teams.
Oh, wow.
Had that.
Oh, God.
But there were several Vanderbilt teams that were down there, and I think there would maybe been a Kentucky team before this current rebuild started years and years ago, that was in that place. So we've seen some pretty crap. We again, 2012 Auburn.
Well, yeah. I thought about 2012 Auburn, but they did win the three non-conference games other than the big one. I can't remember who they played as their big one.
Hey, but I'm just saying that was one. I mean, but I think there were some similar kind of Ole Miss and Mississippi State had both had terrible seasons during that time.
Yeah.
That's a big time period. And I think there's been a lot of ebb and flow, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of NCAA rules about forfeiting victories, Alabama has a couple 0-12s in there. So.
They do. I love that technically Alabama has the worst record in the SEC in the last like 30 years or more, at least. Well, no, South Carolina had an 0-11 or 0-12 year in the 2000s, mm-hmm. too. So Alabama's
that South Carolina team was down there, too.
Oh, wow. I forgot. Yeah, there was an 0-11, 0-12 South Carolina that would be even worse. Oh, man. Yeah, so that was the year that Lou Holtz wouldn't even let them have, like, a logo on their helmets. He just, like, took everything away. They had, like, practice jerseys they played in and stuff, like the red with the white helmets because they were so bad. Oh, man. Well, anyway, that was kind of funny. What other questions do we have, if any?
Danny Buckles asks, why is it that we keep having top 10 recruiting classes and we don't have any first round draft picks? And this was sent kind of not long after the draft ended in April. And I think, thinking back about that, a big piece of that was a lot of our best players stayed we have guys that would be high draft picks and they stayed in school, Derek Brown most particularly, but some of the other defensive linemen as well.
Yeah.
And I think you know, you'll see that change next year. You'll see Auburn have at least one, potentially more than one first round draft pick and more higher draft picks. And it is a cyclical thing, but it's also like you want to have some high draft picks every year,
right?
And especially at some positions where you keep attracting people. I think it was, you know, it was really good for Auburn. The Slayton got drafted, and that you know, that our good defensive back got drafted, and that kind of stuff. So I think all those things help. But you know, it's good to have those guys at the top of the draft getting picked, walking across the stage when everybody's watching. So I think that's important.
I think it's like with our quarterback play and everything else, it's been a combination of things. And I think that part of it has been that the players we've recruited that looked like they would be top-level NFL draft picks either didn't pan out or transferred away or crapped out, like our defensive lineman a couple of years ago, you know, and some of our receivers and stuff. It's just things have gone wrong with them. While our really good players have tended to be players that weren't as highly regarded coming into college to some degree, and I don't think the NFL looks at them as first round draft choices. You know what I mean? In other words, if you come in as like a 3-star high school player and you turn out to be a really good college player, you still have a hard time getting drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. It's the 5-star guys that go to college, play like 5-star players, and then go off and get drafted. They're the ones like that. And so that's why we had a Cam and a Nick Fairley and, you know, Kerryon and players like that. We've had some. But our players that have really done great for us on the field have tended to be guys that kind of they weren't as highly regarded maybe coming in. And I think you're right that we have some now that'll be coming out next year that more meet those criteria.
That's fair. Yeah. We had in the last couple of months we've had a couple of questions, one from Rusty Owens and one from Danny Buckles about your favorite topic, which is will Auburn play fast on offense?
Oh yeah. Well,
and how do you feel about that today in May?
Well, to quote former President George W. Bush, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again. So I'm afraid I'll get fooled again if I say, oh, now this time, you know, I'll believe it when I see the blur. I just,
that's fair.
I feel like it's something that Gus always threatens and holds out there like an illusion, but then in the actual game flow, he's trying to protect the defense and maybe protect a lead or something, and he doesn't want to do that. Am I crazy, or does it seem like Gus is not as married to his famous offensive philosophies as like a Mike Leach is to his? In other words, I can't imagine Mike Leach doing anything other than running his air raid offense under any circumstances. I feel like if he had 11 offensive players that could not run the air raid, he would have them out there failing for an entire season just to do it. Whereas Gus, you put him in the SEC as a head coach, and it's like immediately he's three yards in a cloud of dust, run the clock, keep the defense off the field.
But I think even Leach has adjusted over time. He runs his offense has gotten better at running the ball and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit there. But I think it's a fair statement in terms of what's his core philosophy. But I think, you know, you said it. We don't want to get our hopes up and we get fooled again. But I think we saw the offense in the bowl game.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what we hope to see going forward.
I just feel like Gus as an offensive coordinator was a very different coach than Gus as the head coach. And a lot of the things that Gus complained about head coaches doing to him as offensive coordinator, he embraced the second he became a head coach.
Yes.
So we'll see.
It's very true.
I'm imagining him having a golem-like argument with himself on the sideline. We must go faster, Precious. No, no, it burns us. Any other questions?
The last one is from me, and I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
It's May. What worries you most about the Auburn football team heading into this point, into the season at this point?
John, this is May. This was Indy. This was Memorial Day weekend. This was a great time. Did I tell you I had a really good time in Indianapolis at the race? It was so awesome. You said May. I immediately think everything in Indianapolis is this is May. May is their big month. So, man, it was so cool. And Rossi came so close. I'm there in my Rossi jersey in the stands. People are patting me on the back like, he's going to do it. And Pagano got him at the very end. I was like, dang it. But anyway, Alan and I will be talking about that soon on the Open Wheels show on the White Rocket Network. Yes. So your question was, what about May for football? I got to change gears here, literally.
What are you worried about?
What am I worried about? For this coming season, not as much. The offensive line is giving me the cold sweats at night for next year, for 2020. But for 2019, I'm hoping that Gus, the offensive coordinator, play caller, is a better play caller than Gus calling plays against Clemson a couple of times and Texas A&M, where he looked like he didn't know what he was doing, honestly. Right, there were times in what was it 16, mm-hmm. 15, 16, 17, somewhere in there were the times that his offensive play selection and designs just it looked like he did them in 5 minutes between practices when he really hadn't had time to think about it. So I think I feel like we've got the pieces on defense, we've pretty much got the pieces on offense if they can come together. I'm just concerned that he is back to being his old self and that he's comfortable with whichever quarterback is out there. And I just want everything to run smoothly. Is that good? Does that make
sense? No, that's a fair statement.
What are you worried most about?
I mean, we're talking about playing two basically freshman quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know, or one of them, I think we're going to end up playing both of them. But, you know, and I think you worry about a third and long, what that's going to look like sometimes against good teams. And we're going to play good teams. So I think that's what I worry. And the schedule is really tough. I worry about that. We're breaking in a bunch of new linebackers. We've had great linebacker play the last couple of years, very consistent. And so we have a lot of talented players there. And I think we really have a lot of confidence in the coaching at that position. But it's just new guys. And all it takes is kind of one step in the wrong direction and it leads to big plays the other team. So,
and we'll certainly
I'll be keeping my eye on them early on. I can tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll certainly be talking about that schedule in days to come. I saw that one of the magazines rated our schedule like the 11th or 12th hardest in the SEC. And I'm like, these people are doing some serious, they're
smoke weed every day.
They're hitting the hard stuff because I mean, they were all saying, oh, South Carolina's schedule is so, so hard. And Auburn's is like 12th or something. And I honestly, the only difference is they play Clemson. And that's big, yes. But other than that, we play almost the same teams. And it's just ridiculous to say that theirs was that much harder than ours because of, you know, we play, I guess, Oregon, and they play Clemson and somebody else. But so, yeah, I think theirs is harder, but it's not. It's not as cut and dried as all that. So, before we get to our Around the SEC and wrap things up, got to quickly thank the folks that keep the lights on at the Palatial White Rocket Studios and let us do shows like this and do shows like the Game of Thrones shows on the White Rocket Network and our James Bond On Her Majesty's Secret podcast. And all the other shows we're going to do and are doing and currently doing, a bunch of other things as well. And if you want to help out and contribute, be part of the AU Wishbone family for as little as a dollar a month, though we certainly appreciate more. And there's lots of ways you can click in there to do that. Just go to www.auwishbone.com. And if you, by the way, if you go to www.auwishbone.com, if you go there, you will see that I have recently updated that we've got the first 4 episodes of We Believed, our special documentary audio series on Auburn through the last 40 plus years. And I've put in some illustrations, some pictures of the players and coaches and events that those each episode covers. So you can hear the first episode, which is like the late 70s up through Pat Dye. The second episode is the early Pat Dye years. The third episode is the later Pat Dye years. And the 80, oh, there's five, right? The fourth, yeah, the third is the later Pat Dye years. The fourth is the first time ever, 89 Iron Bowl through 92 when he leaves, when he retires. And then those four are up there now. There is a fifth episode covering the Terry Bowden era, including the 11-0 season and Damian Craig, where we talked to Cole Kublik and some folks. That episode currently is only available to our patrons. So if you want to hear it and not keep waiting, just go and sign up and become a patron. Go to www.auwishbone.com and follow the link to do that. Here are the folks that currently are keeping things rolling at the AU Wishbone and White Rocket. Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Carl Von Drucker. And then we have Phil M. Thor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. We appreciate you folks. And then there's Clarence Alford, David Hegler, Robert Mendenhall, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrecht, William Glenn Matthews, and Joel Beckham. Oh, let me insert here right quick that I occasionally get a notification in my email that somebody has left a comment in the Patreon, but I can't get the dang thing to let me see it. I can't find how to see the comments. If it's a comment on a post, I can go back and comment below it. But if it's just a comment sent to me like a direct message, honestly, I have yet to... It shouldn't be this hard, right, Patreon? It shouldn't be this hard for me to see my messages, but I know that somebody asked, you know, when are you doing another show? We're doing it now. I'm sorry, I didn't have a sooner answer for you, but I can't figure out how to reply, so sorry. Anyway, back to our list. Last a few names left. Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor Sanford, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, and Dave Powell, Jeremy Minton, Lane Middleton, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, and then our last few are John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brent Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Surfer Chickify, and our other one-time donors and anonymous donors. We appreciate all of you, and we thank you all very, very, very much. And you guys keep things rolling here, and what would we ever do without you? I don't know. And I just closed out my notes, dang it, but we had... Let me go ahead and push the button to do the take a trip around. And I'm going to push it again. There it goes.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Let's do it. Mira got to, speaking of whom, Mira got to, I got her a set of headphones. So we were sitting there in the stands listening to the drivers and the stadium announcers and everything at Indy during the race. That was really fun, really cool to have the headphones and the little scanners. That was a neat thing. All right, so let's see. Around the SEC, you mentioned Florida trouble to me, and I had to go look it up because, honestly, I hadn't seen much about it. Florida's got some – I like how one article I was looking at said that, like, up until May, everything was just going great for Florida. People were talking about them challenging Georgia. And then May has happened. What all is going on down there?
They've had a bad few weeks. Yeah. First, you know, one of their starting defensive backs was arrested for sexual assault. The director of player personnel was arrested for stalking. Then they had two high-profile recruits some problems with. One was a quarterback that Mullen had been recruiting for years, and he, you know, got accused of sexual assault and transferred. Left Florida. And I think he's enrolled at Jackson State now. And then the defensive back, who was the highest profile recruit that Florida signed in the last signing period named Chris Steele had, you know, complained about a couple things, and he transferred to Oregon. He is attempting, theoretically, to get eligible and might play against Auburn in the start of the season.
So we were going to play him one way or the other, maybe, and now we'll get him at the first game instead of later. Yeah, that's funny.
And but he, I mean, again, the eligibility thing is not automatic. He may not get it, but he's gone. He's left Florida. So I think all of those things are big things, and I think, you know, the Florida fans have concerns because Mullen isn't raking in the same, you know, there were still levels and levels below Georgia and then the recruiting at the macro level. And I think they're worried about that in the long term. And these kind of things, you know, kind of add on to that. And they've had a tough offseason, basically.
I just hate it. I hate it for them.
I do too.
I feel really bad about it. This I didn't know anything about at all. Ole Miss has two new coordinators. I guess, they kept their coach that was kind of their Mike Shula guy, right, to get them through the rough times, but they changed out coordinators.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive coordinator was McGriff, and they fired him. And then the offensive coordinator was a guy named Longo, and he left and went to North Carolina with Mac Brown.
Okay.
And so they needed to bring in two coordinators. So they basically, you know, part of it was like Luke inherited this thing, and then he went through the sanctions and stuff, and he didn't want to change out guys who had been kind of with him through the bad times. But they needed to shake things up a bit. And so one of the things he did is he brought in two guys who are experienced head coaches as his coordinators. Their offensive coordinator is Rich Rodriguez.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and their defensive coordinator is the former Colorado head coach, is an excellent defensive coordinator.
That's crazy. Why would they go to Ole Miss?
They needed jobs.
You know who Rich Rodriguez is in addition to everything else. He's the former Alabama head coach for 5 seconds.
He's the guy that Alabama wanted, that he said no, and then they turned around and hired Saban. So.
Wow. You know what, though? There's bad news happening around the SEC, but at least nobody in Georgia is getting arrested, right? I mean, it's an unusual thing to say, but nobody at UGA has got – what happened?
I think we're up to 6 players arrested this offseason. You know, it's clearly marked Rick has – oh, wait, that's not his problem anymore,
it's not on him anymore, man.
Yeah, it was never going to happen once Rick left because it was clearly a Rick problem. No, it's a Georgia problem. And then they've had 6 players arrested this offseason. And I know, like, I get it. Like, it's college football. We have to be careful because we all live in glass houses. But this is an annual offseason event for Georgia. Players getting in trouble and them sweeping under the rug. So
Georgia fans are like, well, we got rid of Richt, so there won't be any more of these player arrests en masse. There won't be any more of these 6 Georgia players have been arrested, and Georgia fans now are like,
come on. Come on, man.
Come on, man. it just never – Florida and Georgia having trouble. The only thing better than that is Alabama having trouble. And then lastly, I guess, Mississippi State got Penn State quarterback. What's up?
Yeah, I mean, Moorhead had the Penn State connections, and there's a Penn State – grad transfer quarterback who people thought might end up being the starter at Penn State, and then he kind of got beat out by a younger guy. His name's the experienced quarterback's name is Tommy Stevens, and he's transferred to Mississippi State. And I think there's a chance that he clearly knows Moorhead system because he was there. He was Trace McSorley's backup at Penn State. And a lot of people at Penn State had just been assuming that he was going to be the guy. Going into the season, when he didn't win the job, kind of out of spring, he left, and now he's at Mississippi State. And I think Mississippi State had that Keaton Thompson guy who played some last year, but I think there's a chance that Stevens gets the job and runs with it.
I'm just trying to imagine the culture shock of going from Penn State to Mississippi State. I guess it's still not like going from Columbia in Manhattan to Mississippi State, but it's still, I mean, you know, it's a different world than a lot of places, so that'll be interesting. But yeah, I don't like it when Big Ten quarterbacks come down to the SEC West, because as often as not, they tend to do better than people think. And it annoys me, like the guy that ended up at LSU last year. So I didn't like that at all. I was expecting him to fail, and I didn't like him beating us, and that ticked me off, even though I know there were extenuating circumstances, but still. So, yeah, I don't like the Big Ten quarterbacks coming down and doing well in the SEC. It just irks me for some reason. On an emotional and a spiritual level, it just makes me mad, you know. Big Ten quarterbacks coming down here, what's the problem with that?
No, that's fair. And this guy didn't play a lot last year, but I think they've seen him. He played a little bit more the year before, but he's an experienced guy. He's been in the system, and they've seen him play in the spring games and stuff. So,
all right. Well, and is Arkansas doing anything to get better? Was it just a situation where they were transitioning from that whatever you call it offense that Burt ran to whatever this is that the Memphis guy runs, or what?
The Tulsa guy.
Tulsa guy, that's right.
I think they got a couple of transfers in they think are going to help, and they feel like they have some more experience at positions. I think the biggest thing is they got to recruit some better players, especially like some positions they were just abysmal.
Yeah,
and they were so terrible that it's tough to to say like, oh well, they're going to be better. But I think it's a long-term thing, and they knew that. I mean, you're in the SEC West, it's not going to change overnight. Even if you get a great player at one position, it's one guy. So I think they know they're in for a long haul there.
If I recall correctly, there when we that was the game we were at last year.
Mm-hmm.
And are doing our live show, and if I remember correctly, we didn't exactly blow them away just play to play. What we beat them with was athletic talent on certain key places on the field, like
and special teams.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like they didn't know what they were doing with X's and O's. They weren't just inept. It's that they just didn't have the players to compete at a SEC West top level, right?
That's it.
Yeah. So,
okay. And I think, again, they got a little bit better at the end of the year, a little more competitive, but, I think they're not going to be terrible again. I think they're going to be bad, but not abysmal.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. Well, I guess that gets us to the end of this sort of off-season developments episode. We talked about Rod Bramblett, and God rest him. We've zipped through a few other odds and ends. Any last thoughts before we wrap up for this week?
Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there. We think about what that day means for us and absolutely for everybody in America. And hug your kids.
Absolutely. We'll continue a sort of an irregular programming schedule for the next few weeks. We're going to try to do a couple of the things that you guys expect from us in the late spring and into the summer. Those who've been around a year or two or more know what we're talking about. I'm not going to say them yet in case they don't happen, but we'll try to get everything that we usually do on. And then, of course, once we get into the summer, before we know it, it'll be almost time for the barbecue, John.
It's true.
It's going to be on us quick.
Taste it.
Almost taste it. All right. Well, I guess our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Chris Davis is going to drop back into the end zone in single safety. But I guess if this thing comes up short, he can field it and run it out. All right, here we go. 56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow. Oh, my God. Auburn wins. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl in the most unbelievable fashion you will ever see. I cannot believe it.
Oh, my God.
34-28. And we thought a miracle at Jordan-Hare was amazing. Oh, my Lord in heaven. Chris Davis just read it. 109 yards. And Auburn is going to the championship game.
You got plans next week, my friend. This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Thanks, Rod.